Don Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios with WISR 680 AM. Your news time is just about 12:30. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. You can always get news, by the way, on our website, butlerradio.com, or on Alexa-powered devices. You just download the Butler Radio News skill and say, Alexa, what's in the news? Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
Welcome to the program. It is It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. I am Tyler Friel filling in for Dave Malarkey. He's battling a bit of a bug. We wish him the best and hope he makes his return soon. It feels like I was just here, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, that I was filling in on It's Your Turn. But we're back in action. Cold temperatures today, as you heard Tracy say. We're battling, well, more frigid temperatures that will be coming here tomorrow and Saturday, so stay warm and turn on WISR while you're in the house. We'll try to entertain you here on today's edition of It's Your Turn. Later on in the program, we'll be talking with Courtney Carver. She's the author of Soulful Simplicity, basically how you can live better with a little bit less. And so we'll dive into what that means financially and what that means spiritually as well. And so that conversation is coming up around 1:30. But first, we're going to welcome in Michael Harvey and Larry Black. They are here to talk about the March for Life that is just right around the corner, about a little over 10 days. I guess it's about 15 days away. January 19th is when it is scheduled for. And I guess, as Larry had told me, this would be year 15 that you have been on the show.
15 consecutive years, and it's been fun, but it's been with Dave in the past, so Tyler, we're looking forward to this.
Yeah, we're changing things up. It's a little wild card action coming in here. So we're joined by Larry Black. We're also joined by Michael Harvey. Michael, thanks for coming in.
Hey, it's my pleasure. 15 years on the radio with Larry, and 45 years of March. Yeah. This is the 45th March.
Oh, is it? So 45 yep. years of the March for Life. And so let's circle back here, and Larry, I'll go to you first. When we talk about the March for Life, what exactly are we talking about here?
So it's an opportunity for everyone across the whole country to go to Washington, D.C. to stand up for life. Starts at 12. There's a rally. There's many political speakers. Last year, Mike Pence mm-hmm. showed up personally. We've been there when Ronald Reagan and George Bush have not totally been present personally, but have been on the telephone with the crowd. It's a very positive, enjoyable family environment. And then after that, we walk down Constitution Avenue. Michael and I always are amazed when we get to a certain point in the march, we look back and we see people for as far as we can see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we go see our congressmen, our senators, depending upon schedules, and then try to get back on the bus by 4:30, 5 o'clock. And then make it back to Butler at somewhat a reasonable time. So yeah. It's a full day. It is a full day, yeah. But it's produced some incredible memories, and we can talk about it more later. But that's a kind of a high level, Tyler, as far as kind of what it's about. And we've got a number of people here in Butler County that have been doing it, some for doing it all 45 years.
And what precipitated was the 1973 decision, the Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion. And mm-hmm. so since then, on its anniversary, people from all around the country have been coming to a kind of a silent protest.
Okay.
You know, that we stand for life, and that decision doesn't stand for life.
And so people have been doing this a year after the decision.
Yep.
This is a very, and we're talking about abortion in this instance. This is a very politically charged issue. I mean, when you talk, and it's almost something that it feels like people are uncomfortable talking about, at least in like social gatherings. You know, if you're sitting down and talking with a buddy, you don't really want to bring up abortion because it's uncomfortable. But we're going to do that here,
mm-hmm.
naturally. You know, fill in for Dave. Why not have abortion on the table? Anyways, so Larry, I'll turn to you. How did you get involved in the March for Life process, and more importantly, why did you do that?
Well, So my wife was incredibly helpful. She was part of an organization called Pennsylvanians for Human Life. I joined the organization. I was later the president for 17 years. Tyler, it's a fundamental issue. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if you don't have life, then the rest of those values don't really matter. The Roe versus Wade decision back in 1973, considered the worst legal decision in the history of our country. It was a Supreme Court decision. Harry Blackmun made the decision that babies are not people. And abortion is not necessarily a right, but certainly that decision did make it legal in the United States. At that point, up until then, the states had authority over the issue. So that Supreme Court decision changed everything. And, as a result, 58 million babies have died since 1973.
Probably more likely 60 million when you factor in the fact that there's some that just aren't recorded. They don't keep statistics.
Right.
How many people go on the March for Life, just out of curiosity?
Oh, gosh. I mean, of course, the news is going to downplay it. They'll say 100,000. There's been marches where we've been there every bit 500,000 people.
Wow.
I would say that 300,000 is probably more a good average when you put it all together.
So. Yeah, what you see sometimes is on special anniversaries, the coming up in 5 years at the 50th anniversary. I mean, it will be really huge. Certainly, there's been times in history where there's been more of a reason to participate.
Some of it has been connected with the decisions that the Supreme Court is contemplating.
Right.
And so they want to come to Washington, D.C. to demonstrate a public display of, hey, we still believe this issue is core mm-hmm. to who we are as Americans and human beings.
And this is always an issue. Some people vote primarily on this issue. So like I said, it's a very politically charged issue, not to overuse the phrase, but I think that's the best way to describe it. And Michael, I'll turn to you. Again, why did you get involved with this?
I guess over the years, just coming to the perspective that when I dig a little bit deeper and go past the issue, it's really what we're seeing is a clash of ideologies. This country was certainly founded on religious principles. I'm not going to go so far as to say as it was a Christian country. It just founded on religious principles. And certainly that foundation, while it's eroding in our country, is still there. And so the two ideologies I'm talking about is you have an ideology that says there is a maker and that maker defines what life is. And the other ideology is, no, we don't have a maker. We are just the byproduct of scientific processes, and therefore evolution. We're no different than the animals. And so to me, it's an ideological clash. I'm a person of faith. And when you remove God from that public square, when you take him out of those defining things, then the sky's the limit. And so I want to be consistent with what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And if I believe there's a maker, I believe he's the one who defines life.
Is there a chance for civil and reasonable discussion on this issue? Because it seems like when you bring it up, people have very hard opinions one way or the other, and it's tough to find a common ground.
Yeah.
Is there a chance for people to find a common ground on this?
That's something I'm going to defer to Larry, because I know that past two or three years, this is where Dave Mularkey has gone with us.
Okay.
and there has been a lot. There is a lot of common ground. So
yeah. Tyler, what I would say is if you look at the whole spectrum, there's probably 10% that are incredibly strongly pro-life. On the other end of the spectrum, there's 10% that are strongly pro-abortion, or to use their term, pro-choice. So in the middle is what we call the mushy middle. And they say things like, well, I'm against abortion, but, I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I think it should be legal. So you hear those kind of comments, or they clearly know it's a baby. and clearly know that it's a living being. But there's a lot of rhetoric out there. There's a lot of slogans out there. There is often, and I think this is what you're referring to, if you don't have the facts, then you just scream a little bit louder. And so these opportunities that we've had over the last 15 years with Dave and now with yourself have actually been a really good time to try to objectively, scientifically, just look at, okay, what is the issue, and is there common ground with the folks that may look at things very differently than us? And Dave has really tried to, you know, bring that together, and we've really have had some great conversations along those lines.
Well, let's give one example. Health of the mother. Health of the mother is a big issue.
Mm.
And by the way, about 1.2% of abortions are done because of health of the mother. So while the rhetoric is health of the mother, health of the mother, health of the mother, in reality, not a lot of women get abortions as a result of that. But if health of the mother is important, why not increase the sanitation of the abortion clinics? They don't have the same standards of sanitation. It's not uncommon for the same implement to be used on one woman to not be cleaned and then taken over to another room to be used on another woman. There just isn't the sanitation requirements in abortion clinics that there are in hospitals. Let's raise them up. I mean, if we're really interested in the health of the mother, let's make it a healthy environment, as healthy as a hospital. That's one. Mm-hmm. That's just one of the many areas I think that there's common ground.
And we've even seen some people have very hard stances on this, you know, very mm-hmm. anti-abortion in every case. We've seen a little bit of middle ground when they, you know, politicians and people say, I'm anti-abortion except in the case of rape, incest, mm-hmm. anything like that. And then we've also seen the pro-choice side of it. Do you guys fall somewhere in the middle, or do you lean one way or the other, or do you not want to go there?
No, I'm willing to go there.
Okay.
I think both Michael and I are. Sure.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, again, statistically, only about 1.8% of abortions are as a result of rape, incest, or health of the mother. So when you look at the sheer number, the sheer volume of abortions,
mm-hmm.
they may go there rhetorically, but in practice, it's a red herring. It's a straw man. You know, it's an emotional argument to push the emotion. But, you know, I, again, being a person of faith, nothing happens, in my perspective, by accident. Yes, it's a horrible thing that a woman gets raped. It is. It's horrible. I don't know anybody who has. My feeling is you know, this is, I'm talking about this on the radio, but how often do men and women engage in sexual activity? Well, I'm assuming quite a bit. But not every one of those times is a baby the result. You know, I think, again, referring to being a person of faith, I'm not responsible for conception. I don't have anything to do with that, nor is a woman. I just don't think that there's any reason that a woman should get – what about adoption? There's 1.5 million people in this country wanting to adopt a baby. So the idea that there is an unwanted pregnancy is really not – yes, certainly from the mother it's an unwanted pregnancy, but there's 1.5 million people out there that want children. So it's not an unwanted baby. It's a wanted baby. So let's get that information out there. Let's make adoption more accessible to people. Let's take away the stigma – that comes with carrying a baby when it's not planned.
Mm-hmm.
Let's help a woman realize that your life is not over just because you have an unplanned pregnancy. There are many things out there, many avenues to take care of this rather than to kill your baby.
Larry?
So was your question, where do we stand?
Yeah, where do you stand personally?
Okay. I'm pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wasn't always pro-life. When I was in college, I would tell you that I bought into the rhetoric. I bought into the rhetoric that said, if we have abortion and we can eliminate teenage pregnancy, we can eliminate poverty, we can eliminate homelessness, we can eliminate welfare, everything else. When I was younger, abortion was sold as a panacea. This would solve all of our issues. Mm-hmm. And what I would tell you, 45 years later, it's not only not solved them, it's made them worse.
Yeah.
So, to have a conversation, we actually have these kind of conversations in biology classes in high school all the time, as far as, you know, looking at the development of a baby inside the mother's womb. And what is good in today's environment is there's more information out there than there ever was before. And as a result, the younger generation is more pro-life than often their parents, because they understand the scientific, non-bias facts. And the question is it a baby? And the evidence is overwhelmingly, yes, it is a baby. And if it's a baby, then okay.
It's a life.
It's a life. And then what do we do as a result?
We stand here 45 years later. The Supreme Court has not overturned that decision. Why do you think that is? Because there has been a number of politicians. There has been a number of, I'm not associating Republicans with pro-life, but that is generally the way that the party affiliations go. Same mm-hmm. thing with Supreme Court justices that lean more conservative. There has been Republican presidents, Republican congresses, and conservative judges, and we're seeing that instance right now where the court, in theory, leans towards conservatism. Why has that not been overchanged? Are our politicians, our court cases, are the Supreme Court very hesitant to overturn a decision that was made 45 years ago?
Well, I think that, love to have, different politicians express their views, but I believe that, there's no question that they get a lot of pressure. The Supreme Court decisions have often been 5-4. So it's not like it's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. The fact that the Supreme Court is conservative, it's only been conservative for the last 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
before that, it was 4-4 and there was a swing vote most of the time. But Tyler, where I would go is, 10 years ago, there was 1.5 million abortions done every year. Now it's less than 1 million. In our own state of Pennsylvania, there was a law that was passed both in the House and the Senate that was outlawing abortions in the last trimester of pregnancy. Governor Wolf vetoed it. I'm not sure there's going to be enough votes to overcome that. So what I would say is the House and the Senate all agreed that is bad to have third trimester abortions, but we happen to have one governor who's, in the back pocket of Planned Parenthood who chose to veto that bill. So I would make the case that more people are pro-life in America, and particularly when they're presented with the facts. Sometimes when people are surveyed, it depends on how the questions are asked, but, is it a baby, and is it wrong to kill the baby? And the answer to those questions is, it is wrong, and yes, it is a baby.
Yeah, I just don't think the battle over this issue is going to be won and fought in the courts. I mean, whether they overturn it or not, I think that the battle is being won as I look at the numbers. There's been over the years. Bans against abortions after 20 weeks because of pain. A child can feel pain at 20 weeks in the womb. That's why when they do surgery with babies inside the womb, they give them anesthesia because they know they can feel pain. There's been several attempts to do bans on abortions after 20 weeks, regardless, because of the pain of the baby. And it's people's attempt to try to define what life is. Is it when the heart beats? Is it when the brain, when there's brain waves detected? Brain waves are detected as early as what, 8 weeks?
Six to 8 weeks. 45 days is.
Heart rate is
actually detected.
Earlier than that, right?
20 days.
And so, when does this, you know, not to use – I mean, the word fetus, by the way, means little one. And so to use the word fetus and say it's a mass of tissue really goes against even the very Latin definition of the word fetus. It means little one. It means little child. And, you know, so it's – at 20 weeks, you know, 59% of women and 61% of men support that, support a ban on abortions after 20 weeks based on that mere fact that this child can feel pain. So I think that's one of the reasons that we see a trend downward in abortions is more and more information is becoming available. There's 3D and 4D sonograms, which give a very clear picture that this is not just a massive tissue. This is a human being with eyes and fingers and toes, hair follicles, all sorts of stuff that we normally associate with a human being.
We talk about common ground. Is that common ground? Like if a bill like that were to be passed and instituted into the state of Pennsylvania, is that common ground where you think both sides would get a little bit of a middle ground in terms of the conversation, or do you think we will ever see a bill like that actually get passed in this state?
Are we talking about the state, or are we talking
I'm
about
talking about US? The state. I want us to talk about state level first, because I think when we talk about reality, because we've seen that in Ohio, which is just a neighboring state where they have passed bills along this same line. If that would happen in the state of Pennsylvania, do you think that's common ground to begin a discussion between both sides of this camp?
I do, Tyler. And, you know, I've seen in the past where the common ground has been saying, hey, listen, we need to present the facts to someone who is considering abortion. We need to have a 24-hour waiting period so they make a good decision. We need to communicate that there are choices or options for them to consider before having an abortion. We know that a baby feels pain, and so we believe that abortion should not be done in the third trimester. We believe that, and Michael alluded to this earlier, that the standards for abortion clinics should be the same as hospitals. So I can go down a pretty long list and say, I think I can find a common ground. Bill Clinton, who was considered a pro-choice president, said, I'd like to make abortion legal, but I want to make it safe and rare. And so so I think that's even a middle ground that he was willing to strike, saying, nobody wants abortion. It is not something a civilized society does. There are 7 countries in the world that permit abortions after 20 weeks. The United States is one of them. That says something that I don't think represents us well.
We're talking with Larry Black and Michael Harvey. We're talking about the March for Life, which is coming up January 19th, and more broadly on the topic of abortion. Tyler Friel filling in for Dave Malarkey, by the way. He's battling a bit of a bug, so we wish him all the best. Pat, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue on our conversation. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
A special holiday message now from the folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. I'd like to take this moment to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas, a very happy holiday season, and the best of the new year to come. Merry Christmas from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. And by the way, thanks to so many of you for your help during the past year, whether it's by patronizing the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, by donating items to the store, by helping out with donations to the food bank, or their client aid program, and thanks to all of you who volunteered time and effort for the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. They like to say we stand the tallest when we stoop to help others, and they thank you so much. Thank you, too, for those of you who contributed produce to the food program this summer and fall. Merry Christmas, happy holidays from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler.
Welcome back. It's your turn. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. Thank you for joining us. If you are just joining us, we're talking with Michael Harvey and Larry Black. They are a part of the March for Life Butler County team that is going down to Washington, D.C. Larry, let's talk a little bit of logistics here coming up for the March for Life. In case people are interested in going, and when are you leaving? When does the bus depart? How can they get in touch with you? Can you take us through some of that?
Sure. Thanks, Tyler. So there are nine buses, and then there's one van that are going throughout all parts of Butler County. Butler, Zelianople, Herman, Cranberry. The person that leads the March for Butler County is someone that's been doing this for probably all 45 years, and that's Gretchen Carreri. Gretchen is absolutely incredible. She knows which buses still have open seats, which buses maybe fit a particular schedule a little bit better. Let me give Gretchen's number out. It's 724-898-2529, and her email address is G Carreri, and Carreri is C-A-R-A-R-I-E at zoominternet.net. And the buses typically leave around 6. There's a few changes there every once in a while. And they'll typically get home around 11. It's a full day. Always having kids on the bus because we think it's an educational experience. We think it's the right environment for them to learn and to see things up close and to see our nation's capital and to meet our congressmen and our senators. So I think it's one of the most educational experiences a person could have. I will share this. Michael and I led the bus for probably 10 years. And there was only one time that we lost one person. and the good news is his name was Vern Cumberland. Vern's, passed away a few years ago. But Vern escaped from the Germans in the Battle of the Bulge. And so the good news is we found him on the metro on the way back home. But other than that, we've always brought back everybody that we left with.
Yeah. That's always a fun time.
What else is a part of the day? I know we talked about the march, where you're with a number of other people. But are there any other different aspects, Michael, that take part during that day?
As Larry said, there's usually about an hour or so that you're standing on the mall and you're listening to various speakers, and then you line up and you start heading up. Is it Constitution Avenue, and then mm-hmm. Pennsylvania Avenue?
Right.
You circle around behind the Capitol building, and you walk in front of the Supreme Court, and there's typically someone speaking on the steps, multiple people, both for and against, signs for and against. There's always usually a small opposition force, so to speak. I hate to use that word because they've got signs, and they're out there to protest as well. But then you circle around to the Senate and the Senate office buildings, and usually the senators from, at least in our case, senators from Western Pennsylvania have a reception. And depending on how cold it is, and it's been bitter at times, they have hot chocolate, coffee, some snacks, and then you can engage in conversation, and they kind of address the crowd that's there. And those crowds are usually pretty full. Those rooms get really full. And they talk about things that they're going to be doing and that they anticipate doing in the next couple years related to the issue of abortion and pro-life. And that really is primarily it. But it is, like Larry said, it is an opportunity for education. And I think that, to me, the internet has made information, has provided information in such a way where it's easily accessible. And the challenge for people is whether they're pro or against is to wade through all the information and to read it and to take it all in. No one likes to read information that they don't agree with. Mm-hmm. Who wants to tolerate that? But I think that, to me, is important. And I try to read as much as I can on both sides just to see what's going on. I read the Planned Parenthood information. It's hard to stomach some of that stuff because the deeper you go into that, you realize they're not really interested in parenthood. nor are they interested in planning. In fact, I think if you go back to the foundations of Planned Parenthood, what really was the impetus of Planned Parenthood was racism. 25%, I think that's the statistic, is that since 1973, the African-American population has been decreased 25% because of abortion. That's because statistically, the population, the African-American population in this country is 12%, but 36% of African-Americans receive or get abortions. Margaret Sanger, who was the founder of Planned Parenthood, that was she was very vocal. She was a very vocal racist, and she saw that very much as a means of ridding this country of African-Americans. So it's a racial issue. It's a sex selection issue. You know, I mean, 40% of women interviewed have terminated because of sex selection. It is 67% to 85% of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted. And so there's a lot of stuff going on there. And again, I digressed from your main question, but education is just so important.
When I've been filling in for Dave, I've had a few other journalists on, and we've been talking about people living in silos now more than ever in terms of the information they get, whether it's one way or the other.
Sure.
That people have a tendency, like you said, Michael, to take in the information that pertains to them. Mm-hmm. When you come across people who are pro-choice, a part of this march, what's the conversation like? What is the interaction? Is it volatile, or is it rather, I don't want to say friendly discussion, but is it a civil discussion?
Typically, there's not a whole lot of opportunity to interact.
Okay.
Because once you start moving, if you don't move, you will get swallowed up.
Okay.
And so there's not a whole lot of opportunity. You know, when you've got 100,000 to 300,000 people marching and pushing up Constitution, Pennsylvania Avenue, there's not really an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like this time on the radio. And I think there's been a few shows in the 15 years that we've done where we've actually fielded calls.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love, and I've told Larry and I've told Dave this, there's three microphones in here. Let's get someone from the pro-choice side.
Mm-hmm.
Let's sit and talk right here. Because I think there is opportunity to be civil. There is misinformation out there. And yes, there's misinformation on both sides. Unfortunately, like Fox News, they still are biased too, one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have our biases. But I think I think it's incumbent upon us, everybody, to get the facts straight and then to be willing to sit down. But when you get emotions involved, it's really difficult. It's difficult to stay those emotions and talk civilly. But it's possible.
We're here with Michael Harvey. Larry Black was going to switch up the last names there. Always got to check the notes. Always got to be careful. And we're talking about the March for Life, which is coming up on January 19th, which is just right around the corner. It's on a Friday. You said normally it's on, Larry, January 22nd, which is the anniversary of Roe v. Wade and the decision there. But they've changed it this year.
They did, and I think it's a great move. It's on a Friday. You know, it's a full day. You're feeling a little tired. You walk for a long time. You stand for a long time. So you come home on Friday. You've got the weekend to recover. I think it's a good move on the marches.
Or you can stay there.
Or you can stay there
on the weekend.
Stay there in D.C. Sure.
There's a ton of stuff to do in D.C. They just opened the Bible Museum. So go down and see the Bible Museum.
I want to bring up, because you had brought this up to me off air, so we'll go down that route, because you said Dave had done it in the past. Larry, you say pro-life, but you're also for the death penalty. This, on its face, seems contradictory. Why do you feel that way?
Well, this has been a little bit of a journey for me, Tyler.
Okay.
Because I'm not, you know, I think probably 2 years ago, I'm not sure that I would have probably said that. But, you know, because of the discussion that Davis had with us, it challenged me. And I said, okay, where do I really stand on this
mm-hmm.
issue? Because I will tell you that the guy that was the best man in our wedding has challenged me on this. And so where I come down on is I am pro-life, and there's no question about it. But capital punishment, when there is not just clear evidence, but total evidence, eyewitness evidence, that the crime was clearly committed and that it is of a incredibly severe manner, that respecting life also means that there should be an appropriate punishment for acts that are done that have that take the life of another person. You know, the Oklahoma City bomber killed 347 people. Should he certainly he deserved jail. But is that a good evidence? Is that a good situation that saying why is that crime so heinous that it deserves the death penalty? You know, and I don't want to say I've got that issue totally understood.
I feel a little nuance.
Yeah, there's some things that I'd love to have more discussion with people that have studied that a little bit more than I have, because I can't say capital punishment for everybody, and I'm certainly aware of those situations where people have been on death row and found to be innocent. Mm-hmm. And those are exactly the kind of situations where I would say no, absolutely no.
Michael, your thoughts on that?
Well, I guess, again, I brought up this whole ideological conflict, mm-hmm. and the clash of ideologies. And, you know, if I am a collection of cells and there really is no rhyme or reason as to why I was made or why the collection of cells came together to create a human being or to form a human being in whatever evolutionary chain you want to do, then my life really doesn't have value. There's no value to just a collection of cells, right? And it's the same argument that a pro-choice person would use. That's just a mass of cells, so there's no value to it. You can get rid of it. Then on the other hand, if you come from the ideological perspective that there is a creator who has purposefully created us for something, I don't define what that life is or where that value is. He does. And for purpose of discussions, if life is valuable and if your life is valuable, Tyler, and I take it upon myself to take that life, then my personal perspective is I ought to forfeit my life because I didn't have any right to take it. I didn't have any right to take it from you. That, to me, upholds the value and the dignity and the sanctity of life. Whereas to not punish that person because they took that life is to devalue life. That's where I stand.
And just as how I think people would counter, you know, in that regard would be, that God would be the one with the be-all, end-all decision.
Yes.
And so in this instance, you have another human taking the life of another human. And I understand where you're coming from, but again, I think a counter-argument to that would be if he did it and you leave things into God's hands, mm-hmm. why should another human take it upon himself to take the life of another one?
Yeah, well, that's why we have government. And again, from the ideological perspective that I believe there is a creator who has created life, who's defined life, that creator has also given responsibility to government. And yes, this is where I completely agree with Larry. I think it has to be absolutely undeniable because human government's fallible. Human government does make bad decisions, hence the decision in 1973, Roe v. Wade, the worst decision the Supreme Court ever made. They do make bad decisions, but nonetheless, government has still been given the responsibility as the arm of enforcing the will of the maker.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I go to that question.
Larry, is there a problem with the terminology we use to describe this argument? Pro-life, pro-choice. It seems to put people on one big side of the argument. Do you think if we strip down these terms and just associated each other in terms of pro-abortion or anti-abortion, you would have a better chance to have a civil discussion?
Tyler, I love this question. I don't know if I've ever been asked this question. I think the answer is yes. I would tell you that I feel like I'm pro-choice. Okay, and the reason I feel like I'm pro-choice is because I believe that a woman should have options, that there are adoptions besides besides abortion that should be considered. Those on the pro-abortion, pro-choice say, you know, I want the option of abortion to always be there. It does create barriers. You're very astute in picking up on that. And so when you start out at a volatile point, it is really difficult to have a balanced discussion where you can have discussion that takes us somewhere. What's your recommendation as far as what the different camps might be mm-hmm. called? Because I'm not sure I would know that, but I like the question.
Or there's some that might go pro-life, pro-death, you know, and that's even more polarizing. but you're right. I mean, if you change the labels, you know, we're good at labels, aren't we? Mm-hmm. We as humans, we're good at labels, and those labels tend to say, okay, well, I'm not going to talk to that person because they're of that label. I'm not going to talk to that person because of that label. So I think there is some wisdom in changing some of the barriers to discussion.
Well, in today's environment, people try to put a label on you.
Yeah, they do,
and that's what discourages discussion.
And that's when someone comes up to you, you know, whether it be a friend, whether it be a family, or you know, maybe someone in your church who doesn't agree with you, who agrees with 90% of what the philosophy is, but there's 10% that, you know, he doesn't, or he or she does not agree with. How does that conversation go? Where do you go? Because again, we talk about how polarizing of an issue this is, and really all across the political spectrum in this country right now, people have one opinion or the other, and they don't like venturing into having this discussion. So if you know someone that has a differing opinion, how does that conversation go?
Well, this is a life lesson that I've learned. And Tyler, where I'd go with that is I think I ask questions first. Okay? And depending upon the particular
not great sound barriers in here. You can hear a little every creak. You know, trying to get a sip of water, and I'm knocking stuff
around. Well, thankfully, that wasn't Tyler hitting Larry upside of the head.
Yeah, that's right. But you know, and you know, what's interesting is I often have this some of these conversations with my broader family members because they know where I stand, and you know, they might look at things differently. And so, you can throw out terms. And so, one question I'd ask is, okay, what do you mean by that? Another question is, well, how did you come to that conclusion? And this is actually something I learned from my son, is to say, you know, have you considered? Because what typically happens is that there's shouting that goes on, and it's a battle of words. It's a battle of how much one person can try to, you know, scream louder than the other. But I think if you ask, you know, and I'm not saying those are only three questions. Those are just some of the questions. But if you create that questioning environment and you really learn from what they're trying to say, you can find out that in some cases what they're really trying to say is not what you're hearing. But the other thing is, you find out that, hey, the basis for where you're coming from might not be, you know, totally accurate. So, you know, I've found great success in just asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm like Michael, I don't know all the answers.
Do you have a way to go about it?
You know, I was contemplating the question when Larry was talking, and the bottom line that I've really come down to, and I'm guilty of this as well. We live in a Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, mm-hmm. easy, quick answers. But I know you're looking past me because there's a break coming. But I think the bottom line is we are not taught how to think anymore. And I'll carry that on. I'll continue that conversation after the break.
That's called a tease. That is a great radio job. We will come back. We'll take a short break. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR.
Up to us, we're going your way. Getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and
and economical. Just hop a bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop a bus. Leave the driving up to us.
Bus.
We're going your way.
Welcome back to It's Your Turn. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. We are going to open up the phone lines. We've got about another 15 minutes of our conversation with Michael Harvey and Larry Black. We do ask, as a part of this conversation, keep it civil. That's what we have been trying to emphasize here. So, caller, welcome to It's Your Turn. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I have something that upsets me quite a bit. I often get a call from someone that is definitely anti-abortion. I'm asked if I'm pro-life or pro-choice. If I say I'm pro-choice, the person never says a word, immediately slams down the phone. I just don't think that that's proper. Myself, I am anti-abortion. I would never receive an abortion. But I sometimes feel that someone else has to make their own choice. I'm never asked to discuss it. Any comment?
Well, yeah, I think that, and maybe I'll dish it off to Larry here, but I think that gets back to our conversation about labeling it one way or the other. So if you're, you know, getting a call about a poll question or something of that nature, it's labeled one way or the other, and they're looking for information, and sometimes you have to be careful about who that affiliation is, because I think one way or the other, they may be trying to phrase their questions in a way that could benefit what they're doing.
That's right. Yeah, sometimes whether it's a pollster or taking surveys, I understand where you're coming from, because it feels like that person has an agenda, and that agenda is being used on you. But let's create a dialogue here. I'm going to take it a little broader, but I hear a lot of politicians saying, "I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I think it should be legal."
Yeah.
So. I've struggled with that, okay, because I struggle with it on a couple different levels. One level is if you have convictions, then it ought to be represented in your actions. And this is going to be really strong, so I want you to be prepared for this, and it's not coming towards you. But
sure.
if I change the discussion, if I said, you know what, I'm personally opposed to killing abortionists, but I really think it should be legal. You would struggle with that, right?
Right.
Yeah, and so let me. I'll ask the question. Even though Tyler's in charge here, how, you know, do you think that this it's a little bit of a ploy that politicians take when they say, "Hey, I'm personally opposed to killing babies, but I think it should be legal." I mean, it feels
yes,
like
yes, I've heard that many times.
Yeah, I mean, Ted Kennedy is the one that I always remember the most, and I hear it from. You know, various candidates, particularly on the East Coast and the West Coast.
But especially what I'm talking about, I never get a thank you, nothing. It's just a phone slamming down, and that's just very unprofessional.
Well, they're not caring about you as a person, and for that reason, I struggle.
But they should be.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. And you're willing to take their call, you're willing to create the conversation, and it doesn't feel like they're really trying to create a conversation with you, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your call. Thank you for listening, and have a good day, caller.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
And, I mean, I think we see that with a number of poll questions, and there's almost a science of polling people that, depending on what side, and this could happen both ways, that the question is not down the middle, but rather is phrased in a way that, well, I mean, we see this all the time when we go to the voting booth, is there's a question there, and you're like, how is this five sentence long, and I have no idea what yes or no means. And I think people do have to be wary of that, because there are a lot of politicians that use these poll informations, again, one way or the other, that could, you know, reinforce their beliefs when it wasn't really taken in a manner, again, that was down the middle, was
right.
Looking for actual true information.
You know, there's one organization that Larry and I go to often. It's the Guttmacher Institute. The Guttmacher Institute is not a faith-based organization. They are pretty much a clearinghouse of information.
For Planned Parenthood.
For Planned Parenthood, interestingly enough. And so you're going to get a lot of I'm going to say unbiased information.
I'll say biased.
Well, it's biased depending on which camp you're in, and okay. certainly. But yeah, I mean, it's a website that I go to often, even though I know that they don't hold the same kind of ideological perspective that I do. But you're right. Statistics can be twisted. Mm-hmm. People can make a statistic say anything they want. But it's still, getting back to what I said before the break, we're just not being taught to critically think anymore. We don't know how to think critically. And some of it is we react rather than respond. And I see that in myself on Facebook. Sometimes my kids put stupid stuff on Facebook, and I react to it rather than respond to it. I'm going to admit the fact that I put some stupid stuff on Facebook too, and I'm trying to stop that.
Good New Year's resolution.
Well, it's not a New Year's resolution. It's something I've been doing over the years, little by little. I really don't get on Facebook anymore. But yeah. That's not where we're here. But we just don't think critically. We're not willing to wrestle with the issues. Even when we go on a news site, we go to a news site that embraces our ideological perspective. Well, I watch CNN because they're liberal. I watch Fox because they're conservative. I watch this, you know, and so it's, you're right. We live in a culture where we have so much information, but even Google, you search enough on Google, they'll do the algorithms in their searches where your searches become actually more narrow and more narrow over time because they're tracking what you're searching for. And so they give you on the search page the stuff you're looking for. So,
Let me take it another way. I would rather have... I believe on this issue, Tyler, you started out our conversation today talking about it could be a volatile, controversial issue. I really have respect for people who have taken a high integrity approach and have chosen to really do their homework, even if they disagree with me. I would much rather have a conversation with that person, maybe even more than a person that agrees with me but that hasn't been willing to invest the time and energy to think through the subject. And I'm not saying, you know, it's hours and hours, but just to get through the slogans, just to get through the phrases and the euphemisms that often hide the truth.
We're talking with Larry Black, Michael Harvey. They are here. They are going to the March for Life. It is on January 19th. Let's just recap a little bit more information, Larry, in case some listeners are joining us late. What's the logistics here, and how can people get in touch?
Sure. So there's 9 buses, Butler, Southern Butler County, Zeeland Opal, Meridian, Herman, Cranberry. There's 3 from Cardinal Worrell North Catholic School, which I applaud those guys. Down there, and then Nick Protos from Gospel Fellowship has taken a van, and so all parts of the county being covered. Gretchen Carreri is the leader, has been the leader, has done an absolutely fantastic job for over 4 decades, and let me give her number and email address if I can one more time. Gretchen's number is 724-898-2529, and her email address is gcarrie, C-A-R-A-R-I-E, at zoominternet.net. And Gretchen will put you on the right bus with the right people, and make sure that you have a lifetime experience for you, for your family, for your kids, that will broaden their horizon in ways that very few things can achieve.
Real quick, just to do the counter argument here.
Sure.
Pro-life, pro-choice.
Okay.
Someone says pro-choice. I believe in pro-choice because I believe in women's rights. I believe in their ability that they should not dictate but have a choice over what they do with their bodies. And there's a lot of people that side with that argument for that specific reason.
Sure.
What would you say to them?
So, Tyler, what they're actually doing there is they're trying to make it a woman's issue as opposed to a human issue. And so the next phrase that typically will come out of their mouth is, it's part of my body. Okay, and I would tell you that I'm not sure I agree with that. I would tell you that it could be a male. They're a female. Their DNA is different. They got their own heart. They have different fingerprints. Everything about them is different. Now, the baby is, it does need and require the care and nurturing of the mother while it's in utero, so I don't have any question about that, and that's a wonderful gift and honor that God has given women. But I would challenge that paradigm that it's part of a woman's body, because science doesn't back that up.
Yep. That's it. I mean, to me, that's the bottom line. Science doesn't back it up. And I, you know, just reiterate everything that Larry said. Yes, that child is growing within the body, but separate genetic makeup, it doesn't, you know, when a woman goes in for abortion, it's not removing a part of her body. It's removing a completely separate entity that's connected to her body. And again, what a dastardly way to move a woman to think about her body. That, I think this is part of I think this is the church's problem too, is to not elevate the role of the women in the home and the role of the women in raising children. It's somehow become a bad thing that a woman is carrying this baby. Regardless of the circumstances, it's become a bad thing that she's carrying this. We need to rid this problem from this woman. That needs to change. That conversation needs to change. And I think that people, pro-life folks, need to elevate the role of women in life. I mean, I think one of the it's a special thing. It's a special role that is given to a woman. But to somehow convince a woman that it's a horrible thing, I don't know what happened in the thinking process there throughout the history that this is now something that's really happening. So I don't know if I answered your question, but yeah, I mean a couple things that I want to follow up with, if you don't mind, is I do think it's important that folks who are pro-life understand the talking points of pro-choice folks. And there are multiple websites to go to get the talking points, to get the arguments. So one of them is whyprolife.org. I believe that's whyprolife.com. Another one, interestingly enough, is concernedwomen.org. And Concerned Women isn't a faith-based organization. It's just a group of concerned women. And that's the interesting thing about going to the marches, is there are feminists for life at these marches, and they're carrying huge signs that say feminists for life. So it's not just a religious issue.
There's atheists for life.
There's atheists for life that carrying huge signs in these marches, and so it's not just a religious issue. It's an issue of humanity. It's about defining what a human is. And you know, you go on Larry and I were having a discussion of this on lunch. Is when you go to a lot of websites nowadays, there's no difference between a human being and an animal in our culture today. And again, I think that's an ideological consequence. If I'm just a collection of cells that was formed somehow in some primordial slime, then I am no different than an animal. But because, again, my ideology says that there was someone above and beyond me that created me, that gives me the dignity that I have because I was created in his image, then I am not just a collection of cells, and I am not just an animal, that I am different than the animals. I am somehow, it doesn't make me better than the animals. It gives me a certain sense of responsibility for the animals. Yeah, I take care of my animals. There are people who don't. But a human being is different than an animal. And as such, animals shouldn't have the same rights as a human being.
45 years ago, they made this decision, and this is almost how we started out our topic of conversation, and this is where we'll end it too. 45 years ago, that's a long time. I mean, we're nearly a half century into this. Do you honestly believe, if you could take your ideals out of it, that this, in some sort of fashion, will ever get overturned?
Was slavery overturned?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So, Tyler, where I go on this issue is this is a fundamental aspect of life. It's a fundamental aspect of who we are as a citizen of a civilized country here in the United States. I'm actually very encouraged by the direction that is occurring as more and more people understand that it's a baby. More and more people, particularly that are younger, are reading their science books or going online and being able to say, this decision doesn't make sense. And I don't know what it'll totally look like. It could be something that gets struck down by the Supreme Court and it becomes something that becomes a state issue.
Which, by the way, it was before the Supreme Court made the decision. It was a state issue. So it'll just get kicked back to the states to decide.
Yeah.
Is that passing the buck, though? Do you think this should be a state issue?
I do. I do. I think that the states are going to be much more in tune and aware of where their people are at and what their people are actually thinking and where they actually stand.
I think that's a fair question. I think it could be passing the buck, but I also think that there's different ways to come at this issue, and I don't. It won't probably be the people that determine whether it goes back to states. It's probably going to be, the Supreme Court or potentially our Congress. But when I look at this issue, it's something that hasn't gone away for 45 years. There's not many other situations, issues that have been part of the national consciousness for as long as this issue has. And the momentum is building instead of going away.
Larry mentioned the issue of slavery. Britain abolished slavery. England abolished slavery 100 years before America did. It's just going to take some time. And so I'll be here 15 more years, Larry.
We'll leave the conversation there. Michael Harvey, Larry Black, they are here. Butler County March for Life, Friday, January 19th in Washington, D.C. Both of you, thank you for coming in and joining the conversation.
Thank you very much for a great job.
We'll take a break, and we are going to talk about simplifying your life. Soulful Simplicity. Courtney Carver, she authored the book. That conversation is coming up on the other side. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
Butler Ambulance Service not only serves the largest portion of Butler County for 911 ambulance response, but they also offer CPR and first aid training classes and are a leader in wheelchair van assistance too. Butler Assist Coach, a division of Butler Ambulance, provides county residents with medical and non-medical wheelchair van transportation for general doctor visits, shopping, or even transportation to an event. To learn more, visit butlerambulance.com or to schedule a transport, call 724-283-4385. Butler Ambulance Service. Care you can count on.
Welcome back to the program, listeners. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. A New Year's here. Of course, we're in 2018, and a lot of people making New Year's resolution. And that's why we're going to go out to the phone lines and have a chance to chat with Courtney Carver. She's the author of Soulful Simplicity, How Living with Less Can Lead to So Much More. Courtney, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is an interesting topic this time of year, and I'm sure, especially with how much you blog and different things like that, that you get a lot of people coming to you asking for different ways to make a New Year's resolution to cut clutter. So if I were to ask you the number one tip for people making New Year's resolutions in 2018, what would it be?
The number one tip would be to make a resolution to listen to your heart before you do anything else, before you declutter one more thing, before you make another change to lose weight or become more organized or whatever we re-resolve to do every single year. Instead, this year, make a resolution to listen to your heart, because if your heart's in the game behind these changes, they will last. They will be easier to accomplish, and you'll feel better about them.
And you talk about our heart and trying to find the resolutions that mean a lot to us. When we're trying to navigate what those decisions are, what those resolutions should be, what are some of the processes that we should look in terms of self-evaluation? Or rather, how do we evaluate our own self?
Yeah, well, I didn't do that for a really long time and really didn't know what I wanted, and so I was always counting on other people or other outside sources to know what was best for me. But once I started my heart practice, as part of my morning routine, that really helped me be able to tap into what I wanted. And it started really simply, and anyone can do this, and it sounds a little woo-woo, but I assure you it's not, because I'm not very woo-woo, so I think that this is really a practice for anyone. But if you can just carve out a couple of minutes a day and sit down, close your eyes, take a couple of deep breaths, and put your hands on your heart. So one hand on your heart and the other hand over the hand that's on your heart. And just sit with that for a little bit. Just feel your heart beating and just sit with that. That's how it started for me. And then I've expanded over the years to actually have conversations with my heart and check in and ask myself, you know, how do you feel today? What do you need? What do you want? What changes would you like to make? Some days there's answers. Some days there is radio silence. But I keep coming back, and it has really made all the difference in how I make change in my life.
How did you come across the idea to go that route in the mornings? Why hand over the heart?
I believe it started for me in a yoga practice. I started yoga in 2006, and I remember, you know, at the end of class and the beginning of class, we would sit quietly, kind of with our hands in a prayer position, and it just felt natural to me to put my hands over my heart instead. And I didn't know why or what was really happening, but that's where it started. And I resisted that for a long time, resisted yoga, because I thought it was people trying to tell me how to slow down. Needless to say, I had never taken a yoga class before. I had thought that because it's not all about slowing down, but that's where it started for me. And then it has just grown. I mean, like all of the changes that I've made, they kind of take on a life of their own and unfold very slowly, but very meaningfully.
The title of Courtney's book, again, is Soulful Simplicity. And when we're talking about simplicity and even how living with less can lead to so much more, which is also a part of the title there, what do you mean by that? Are we talking about spiritually, or are we talking finances here?
Well, it's everything. It is. So just looking at simplicity in general and how I simplified my life, you know, it was everything from diet to debt to clutter to work, to the people I spent time with, to saying no when I wanted to say no, even though before I always said yes, you know, to different obligations and commitments. But it's also so much more than that, because of this element that we've kind of been talking about, this heart-centered practice and the heart being behind all of the changes, you know, really remembering who we are and knowing what matters to us. That was a huge element of it for me, because prior to that, I just was reacting to life's demands and felt like I was always responding to the outside and not the inside. And so what I've realized is that even though I love my clutter-free countertops and that I don't need bookshelves anymore and great benefits on the outside in terms of more time and space, the real gift has been on the inside, that there is more love for myself, more connection with myself, more love and presence for the people around me. Those are the true gifts of this simplicity journey that I've been on.
You talk about saying yes all the time, and I'm one of those victims. Anytime someone comes up to me, I more often than not will say yes, even if it's something that doesn't entirely fit into my schedule. How do you get to the no? How do you make that step? How do you feel confident in yourself to tell someone else, no, I'm not going to do that?
I wrote a chapter in the book called The Art of Knowing, N-O-I-N-G, because we really need those tools, those step-by-step, how to say no, because we're so used to people-pleasing. We don't want to let anybody down. And while that's lovely, we are compromising our health and what may be more important to us by saying yes to things that aren't that important. So I think that we have to practice, for starters. It doesn't come easy. If you really are challenged by it, I say have a yes fast. So for 30 days, say no to everything that you possibly can. I mean, obviously, if there's someone in need, you say yes. But for the most part, it's a no. And you can even use that as an excuse, I guess, with the people that you're saying no to. Just say, I'm having a yes fast. I really need to know how to honor what I need first before I can serve anyone else. And I think that resonates with people and even will inspire other people to think about what they say yes or no to. And as you practice that with your heart practice, you begin to see when you say yes to something you want that your heart says no to, you can feel that in your body. You know, your shoulders tighten up. You probably, you know, you feel a little resentful that you've decided to do this because you really didn't want to. And in the end, that serves no one because you're bitter about it. You're probably a little bit mad at the person that asked you to do it, even though you're the one that said yes. So the more we can say no when our heart says no, the more we can say yes when our heart says yes.
I'm not sure if it's along the same line, but you mentioned that the stress of working a job that didn't align with what your heart wanted impacted your health. How do we know when, you know, our job is presenting us? I think this is a very difficult situation for a lot of people because your job, for a lot of people, is their livelihood, but their job at the same time causes a significant amount of stress. How do we find that balance?
Yeah, we have to be always assessing that because you're right. Like, I needed my job to be paying off tens of thousands of dollars of debt and to help support my family. So the paycheck was why I was in the job, but eventually it didn't balance out anymore because the stress that it was causing on my body and the person I was in my job wasn't the person I really am. You know, I acted like somebody completely different so I could be good at a sales job. And I was constantly stepping out of myself to be this person I thought I was supposed to be in this sales position, not really knowing that that was happening. But looking back, I can see that that is exactly what was happening. And that's really stressful. It's painful. It's, debilitating in some cases. And while I'm not in any way saying that my work caused me to get sick or my lifestyle, I know it contributed to me not feeling well, being exhausted, you know, not remembering who I was really. So once I had the debt paid off, you know, I had to kind of work in baby steps. I started to think about how I really wanted to spend my time. What did I want to do for work? And began to create my own business. And I'm not saying that's for everybody either, but I think that we have more options than we give ourselves credit for, and it's hard to see that when we feel stuck in a job for a paycheck.
And when you're evaluating that and talking about, you know, people in jobs who don't particularly care for their jobs, What is that person supposed to evaluate? You know, what are some of the things that they should look at? Maybe some boxes that they should check off. And I know that could vary person to person, but are there some general things that people should look for?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to look at how we're being paid. And when I say that, I don't mean just money. Like, how are we paid in our job? We're paid with a paycheck. We're paid by perhaps flexibility. By enjoying the work we do or by the people we spend time with. How are you being paid in your job? Really ask that question and decide which of these payments are most important to you. You know, there's going to be a lot of cases where the money comes first because it's a necessity. But we have to consider those other forms of payment as well. And if we're not getting what we need in those other forms of payment, we can look at other options and ways that we might receive that. Like I said, I didn't leave my job until I was 100% debt-free, until I had saved a certain amount of money so that I felt, you know, not completely desperate going into this uncertain career of my own. But immediately I was paid because on a Monday morning, instead of going to another weekly meeting, I got to take my dog for a walk around the lake. Like, that payment, yes, it didn't put food on the table, but it really was amazing. And I knew I had made the right decision in that moment. So I don't know if I got a little off track there, but
I think
that we just have to remember that we're paid in more ways than one, and we have to decide what's important to us when and what needs to happen so we can make a shift. So for me, when I knew I wanted to get out of my job, I thought, what has to happen for me to do this? I mean, I could just quit and shirk all responsibility, but that wasn't really an option for me. So I just knew this debt has to be paid off. I have to have this amount of savings, and this has to be happening in the new business. So I made a little bit of an exit strategy, if you will.
We're talking with Courtney Carver. She's the author of Soulful Simplicity. You talk about practical minimalism. What is that?
Practical minimalism is living with less for people with real lives. I think sometimes we hear these stories about minimalists who throw all their stuff in a dumpster and live with one T-shirt and a backpack and travel the world. But for a lot of us, we don't want that kind of lifestyle. We have families and jobs and homes, and so how can we incorporate minimalism or simplicity into our lives in a way that works best for us, in a way that isn't a sacrifice, but instead adds value. So that means there's no right or wrong number of things that you should be living with. Everyone has to figure that out for themselves, and it looks different on day one than it does on day 300. You know, we change as time moves forward and we create more space for ourselves. I think in many cases we realize that we want to live with even less stuff. But again, it's just family dependent, person dependent. We each have to decide for ourselves what kind of life we want to create. Because even though simplicity is amazing, the end goal isn't to have a simple life. You know, we're not trying to have the simplest life possible. We're trying to get our lives back. We're trying to have a life.
You talk about knowing what your wake-up call is. What does that mean as well?
We all have wake-up calls on a daily basis, some of us on an hourly basis, but we don't hear them because our lives are busy and chaotic and crazy, or we ignore them by covering them up with more chaos and craziness and busyness. But if we would take a few minutes each day to check in and to listen, and when we do hear that inner voice during the day that says, this isn't working, I don't feel well, help me, let's do something different, instead of burying it, pay attention to it. Jot it down on paper. Even if you don't know what to do with it, listen to it, because here's what happens when we ignore our wake-up calls. They keep getting louder and louder and louder. And they get so loud that eventually we get one that we cannot ignore. And I think we can avoid that simply by checking in and listening now.
We're talking with Courtney Carver. She's the author of Soulful Simplicity. That wake-up call that comes, are there certain steps that follow? You talk about, you know, maybe writing it down. Is that something that works for a lot of people?
I think it does. I mean, I think writing down a lot of different things is helpful, because otherwise we're either ignoring them or they're just rolling around in our brain, becoming either bigger or smaller than they are. You know, we chew on it all day long. We're distracted. We can't get it out of our head. Maybe we even lose sleep over it. But if we're just to write it down on paper and see it, you know, words on paper, it takes a lot of the fear out of it, I think, and makes it a little more realistic and becomes step one for an action plan. So if we write down, you know, if we hear that inner voice, our wake-up call calling that says, this isn't working, and we write down, this isn't working, on a piece of paper, then we can have the next question, what's not working? And we can write that down. And maybe we incorporate this into the heart practice we were talking about earlier, where we ask those questions with our hands on our heart. What isn't working? What's the next step? What would make me feel better? What do I have to do next? Who do I have to ask for help? Keep asking the questions, even if you don't know the answers.
Do you find writing to be therapeutic?
Very, yes. I mean, I write for a living, but I also write probably 3 pages a day that is just anything on my mind, things that I hope no one ever reads because it's just, A, probably super boring, but also it's a way for me to clear up the junk inside and make room for the good stuff. So it's also a way to really get a handle on if my thoughts are real or not. I don't know who said it, but there's someone out there. It might be Gretchen Rubin, author Gretchen Rubin, who says, don't believe everything you think. And that's a really powerful lesson because sometimes we start thinking about something and all of a sudden it's true. But were we to write it out and dig in a little bit, we can see that maybe we're overreacting or maybe it's not true at all or maybe we're just hungry. Who knows?
Listeners, if you're joining us midway through, I'm Tyler Friel, filling in for Dave Malarkey. We're talking with Courtney Carver. She's the author of Soulful Simplicity, How Living with Less Can Lead to So Much More. I was chatting with a colleague before we did this interview, and she was talking. She just went on a vacation. She read a few books. One of them, again, was Cutting Down on Clutter, and one of them was Fashion, going through her closet and trying to rid of all the stuff that she didn't need. You do something called Project 333. What does that entail?
Yeah, I created this minimalist fashion challenge in 2010 when I was starting to think about decluttering my closet because I had simplified in other areas of my life, but my closet was totally out of control. And I knew my slow and steady approach to change was not going to work in my closet. I needed an intervention. And I created this challenge where I would dress with 33 items or less for 3 months, including clothing, jewelry, accessories, and shoes, and not counting things like underwear, sleepwear, and workout clothes, although your workout clothes have to work out. So if your workout clothes are spending more time at the grocery store than they are in the gym, then they count towards your 33 items. And it really, I had no idea what to expect from all of this, but not only did it make my mornings easier and help me save money, but I was able to reduce decision fatigue and a ton of guilt. We keep all the stuff in our closet, stuff that doesn't fit, stuff with price tags on it, stuff that we regret buying. And even though we may not know it, it affects us on a daily basis. And I didn't realize how much it did until it was gone, out of sight. And so today, more than 7 years later, I still follow the rules. And so do tens of thousands of people from around the world who have tried the challenge, which is really fun. It's become its own little community.
What other things can we simplify? I think people think of, you know, closet space and, you know, talking about just trying to get rid of some of the other stuff that we do day to day. Are there other areas of our life that we can simplify?
I think we can simplify every area of our life from our homes, our calendars, our to-do lists, our worries and fears. You know, those things come later. I say start with the easy stuff. But yeah, simplicity can really do a lot for us because when we remove the things that don't matter, the things that are in the way, the things that are weighing us down, we've got tremendous opportunity to ask ourselves what we love, what matters, how we want to spend our time. And prior to that, we never really give ourselves a chance to entertain those questions because it feels like there's too much. So creating less will give you room eventually for more.
Have we changed as a society in terms of our thought processes when it comes to how we live? I was talking just the other day, you know, I think there was an old school philosophy that you needed to be the last one in at the off. First one in, last one out mentality. You know, you have to make the money. Have we changed as a society to kind of realize that isn't overall good for our health and for our lives?
I think we're starting to realize it. I think we're still, we still have that, you know, I have to do more to prove to everyone how good I am or how successful I am mentality, but we're beginning to see how damaging that is and beginning to see that our measuring system is a little mixed up. I mean, we measure how we think our day is by how many check marks are on our to-do list, or like you said, who got into the office first, who is sending email the latest into the evening. I was guilty of all of those things. But I think we're recognizing now that if we're burning out in the process, we're not, we're still not getting as much done, and we're not getting as much done well, more importantly. So if we take more time for ourselves, if we go in perhaps when the office opens instead of an hour early, if we take time for lunch and we take a walk, maybe we're not going to have that afternoon crash, and maybe we're not going to just like flip through email and do the busy work just to get through the day because we have no brain power left. I think that is definitely starting to surface.
Does success depend on the individual? Is success different for everyone?
Of course. We all have our own definition of success. But then we also have the overall definition of success, which is more, 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 more. And it's really challenging to resist that and to redefine success for yourself. But once you do, it is tremendous freedom.
We're talking with Courtney Carver. She is the author of Soulful Simplicity. If you had to give one bit of information to our listeners for the new year, what would it be?
Ooh, one bit of information. Every little step counts. And I think we might have even covered this already, but it's worth mentioning again that when we hear about somebody making big change, that change didn't happen for them overnight, and it's not one big change. It's the result of hundreds, maybe even thousands of little tiny steps. So if a change, like for me, becoming debt-free seems insurmountable, just really dial it down to what's the one tiny step you can take. And then use that tiny step you take to motivate the next tiny step and keep making the tiny steps until it results in big change.
Courtney, the author of Soulful Simplicity, how can people buy your book?
They can find it at any major bookstores, hopefully at your local bookstores. You're welcome to request it there if it's not there. And also on my website, bemorewithless.com.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed our chat.
I did too. Thank you.
She's Courtney Carver, the author of Soulful Simplicity, How Living with Less Can Lead to So Much More. And we'll be back right after this.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 6969. The pick three, 800. Pick four, 1349. Pick five, 43510. Wild ball for each of those is 8. And the treasure hunt, 10, 15, 21, 25, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt, $10,000. By the way, the Powerball jackpot last night, 2, 18, 37, 39, 42. The Powerball was 12 and the Power Play was 3. It's still rolling over, folks. It's at $550 million now.
Oh, $550 million. That would be nice. I mean, that's a lot of money. Tyler Friel, in for Dave Malarkey. We are just about wrapping up the program. A big thank you to Courtney Carver, her book, Soulful Simplicity, how to just make your life a little bit more simple. And also we had Michael Harvey and Larry Black on earlier. We were talking about the March for Life, which is coming up on Friday, January 19th. And we talked a little bit more broadly about abortion as a topic. Dave, we'll find out if he will be back or not tomorrow. He's battling a bit of a bug, so we wish him well, and we ask that you send him your best wishes as well. So I may or may not talk to you tomorrow, and if we do talk, we'll have an interesting show for you, and we'll plan that out as we go throughout the morning. Tyler Friel, in for Dave Malarkey. If you would like to listen to this show back, you know, re-air, WISR680.com is the avenue to do that. And so you can find actually all of our on-demand shows, whether it be Let's Talk or whether it be Coffee with Kate. That's all found online, WISR680.com. Also, Knock Basketball, which is rolling right along midway through their season. Much thanks to Pat Parker for keeping us on the air and helping me out here as we go through this Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. Stay warm, folks. We are expected to get to a low of 1 degree tonight. Wake up tomorrow morning with us on WISR as we'll take you through the closings or delays, depending which way they go. We'll have that first thing in the morning at 5:30. You can catch it right here on your hometown radio station, WISR 680 AM. I'm Tyler Friel, signing off. Thanks for listening.
This is your station for the Pittsburgh Steelers, WISR Butler.